The reading is taken from John chapter 10, verses 7 to 18. And if you have a John's Gospel, then it's on page 30. So that's page 896 in the church Bibles. John chapter 10, verse 7. So Jesus again said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father."
Morning, everyone. It is like looking at a musclier version of me, but equally chiselled jaw. We are having a question time afterwards, aren't we? We're having a question time afterwards. So if you look on the front page of the handouts, you see that underneath where it says sermon, that's this bit, we've got a question time where you can text in to that number. Conveniently, this also means if you get bored during the sermon, you can just check WhatsApp and pretend that you are texting in a question, but you can also text in a question. If you want to, you can just have your phone and text now, or you can see on the back, we've also got a space where you can write down your questions for now, and then we'll give like 2 minutes at the end, won't we, after this, for people to text in their questions, and then Andrew will manically try and organise them and then ask them, and then answer them as well, because I won't know. But do please keep the page open, 896. If you close it, do open back up to 896 in those Bibles. And the question that we are starting with today, surely Jesus wants to ruin my life. Surely Jesus wants to ruin our life. And obviously, as a Christian, they've got me up here to give an answer that is no, not yes. I mean, that would be pretty dire, wouldn't it? Surely he wants to ruin my life. Yes, we can all go home. But I reckon most people in London, if you just ask the random person on the street, and they're being honest, most people in London in 2022 would kind of not even think about the question, but just take for granted that the answer is something akin to yes, that following Jesus would lead to a worse life than living for myself. If the choice is between deciding for myself how I live, what's right or wrong, who I want to be, or letting God decide that, any God decide that, absolutely not. I think that's one of our fundamental beliefs, isn't it? That the freer I am to choose in life, the happier I ultimately will be. And so maybe we wouldn't make it as personal as the title. You know, maybe we wouldn't actually like name Jesus, go for him. And maybe, you know, it's a bit excessive for us to say something as extreme as ruin my life. But the idea of signing up to allow the God of the Bible to dictate our morality, or letting a 2,000-year-old religious book decide what we do or don't do, I mean, of course not. We just assume the answer's no. And I reckon it's a question, not just an out there question, but it's actually a question that secretly haunts a lot of us Christians far more than we feel we can admit to one another, or definitely than we'd admit to our mates if we've got them along to church. You know, confident that Jesus' claims really do stack up. I think that's true for me almost all the time. Confident that the claims do stack up. I'm convinced that Jesus is who he says he is. But there is regularly this niggling feeling that although Christianity might be true, I'd be having a bit more fun, or maybe a lot more fun, if I could just do what I wanted instead of listening to Jesus. And it was actually the number one reason why I didn't want to become a Christian when I was 16. I remember it was the Easter of year 12 at school. Anyone remember those few years where we had AS levels? And they made us constantly do exams. Well, I realised that you could just resit them in A-levels, so I didn't really bother. In that year, I remember ever since the summer previously, where we'd done GCSEs, I started to feel a bit more like I was free. I felt freer at school, you know, free from science and maths and geography and RE and all those other subjects I hated that they had made me study from the age of 5 to 16. We actually got free periods at my school as well. You were supposed to go to the library. Yeah, good luck. And I don't know if this is true for you guys as well. I think maybe this happened slightly younger for us because we were in London and because I was my mum was a single parent and I was an only child, so she was off at work. But I had much more freedom at home as well. Free to go out on Friday and Saturday nights. Free to go drinking in the pubs. I mean, how weird is that to say now? Any of the teenagers who are in the room, absolutely don't do that. Oh my gosh, I'm looking at Susie and she's like, shut up. No. But free to go drinking in the pubs, because back then, do you remember, no one used to check IDs like they do now. Or you knew the pubs you get. Ali's nodding in Scotland, they still do. But you know, you could like, you knew the pubs you could go to where they'd let you drink underage. And the kind of deal was you had to sit round the corner from the bar so they could pretend ignorance. And because I was the tallest, even though I had a really high-pitched voice, I mean, I still do, don't I? But because I was the tallest, I'd be the one they'd send up to the bar and I'd be like, can I have 7 pints of Stella, please? But they, you know, felt freer to go to the pub. And sexually freer too. I don't know if it's true for everyone else, but all of a sudden going to house parties, like the aim in life was to make sure that you publicly were snogging someone by the end of the night so you could then talk about the fact that you hooked up. I felt free. And the freedom, it felt good. And life was just fun. And, oh, this is so embarrassing, but it is true. My cousins spoke of Ibiza, my older, cooler cousins spoke of Ibiza as the promised land. And I decided for sure that I was going to go and do a summer season there as soon as I finished A-levels. I mean, this isn't yet the embarrassing bit, but I decided for sure I was going to go and do a summer season there when I finished A-levels. And then I got really excited because I found out that you could be an 18 to 30s rep. Do they still do Club 18 to 30s? Has that survived the pandemic? I don't know, but like an 18 to 30s rep. Now, some of you don't know what that is. That was basically, they would get paid by the hotels to take other people out and go and get drunk. I think maybe I saw it on reality TV at the same time as well. And I thought, what, you get paid to be the guy that everyone loves because you're getting them drunk? I was like, absolutely, yes. I'm going to go and do a summer season there. And I even had these deluded, ideas that probably what I was going to do is I was going to get some older guy to fall in love with me when I was on the island. And then he was just going to look after me for the summer and spoil me. And I really thought I was going to have life sorted. And I'm not saying this to pretend that I was, you know, like living it large. I mean, like, that wasn't my life. This isn't like a before and after. Far from it. I was remembering, I used to think I was hot property because my mum bought me this Ben Sherman shirt with, like, short sleeves so I could show off my muscles that I didn't have. And I remember that my best mate Dan, his mum still used to pick us up when we were 17 at the end of the night out. Do you know what I mean? Like, you'd be like, hey, 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 oh, thanks, Mrs. Moss. And then we'd go home. You know, I didn't live it large. I'm just more saying it because that year at school, I genuinely felt like I was gaining freedom. I really did. And at the very same time, as I was tasting that, I had one of my best mates at school and my history teacher at school who were talking to me about Jesus. And they had answers to my questions when I'd asked them, and I didn't have very good answers to their questions when they'd asked me. And I was really worried because I was becoming convinced that maybe they were right. And I was faced with this decision as to whether or not I was going to keep control of my life and or whether I was going to follow Jesus and let his teaching direct my life. And the big question I wrestled with was, if trusting Jesus involves doing what he likes and not doing the things he doesn't like, well, then won't following Jesus just ruin my fun? Won't he ruin my life? And if you're not a regular at Crossway, I don't know what brought you here today, but you know, maybe you're here because you've been debating this Christian stuff back and forth with whoever brought you for a long time, and this is part of that ongoing conversation. Maybe you're just being kind to your Christian mate, as Andrew was saying earlier, who's endlessly invited you to stuff, and you're finally giving in. You think, like, this will get them off my back for another 5 months. Maybe you are open to Christian stuff. Maybe the aggressive atheism. We were really aggressive, weren't we, in our atheism in, like, 2005, when Dawkins, like, The God Delusion came out, and I feel like we're slightly not as aggressive anymore. I mean, I think we as a culture now are a bit like, okay, I hear you, but I do want there to be something behind the universe more than just blind chance. You know, I do want my life to matter. And at funerals, just saying like, oh, well, I mean, that doesn't feel very satisfying. But at the same time, that definitely doesn't mean you're ready to let God decide what you do and don't do. And you're worried, you know, you're worried, look, if I really start engaging with this Christian stuff, won't it ruin my life? And I was thinking as well, back in 2003, when I was thinking all this stuff through, I think the big question was about whether or not I would have freedom to do what I wanted to do. And I wonder if now, as a culture, we're much more concerned about whether or not we have freedom to be who we want to be. And then all of a sudden, the idea of following what the Bible says sounds much more like a cage, feels much more like a cage, even than it did for me. The idea of letting God not just define my actions, but also my identity. Yeah, obviously he wants to ruin my life. Surely Jesus wants to ruin my life. And as I said at the beginning, obviously I'm not going to say at the end of this, yes, he does. And it will come as no surprise either that as we read the reading, Jesus didn't think that he would ruin our life either. In fact, he says the very opposite is true, doesn't he? And the first point today, Jesus offers the best life. Basically, we're just going to go, Jesus offers the best life because Jesus is the best leader. I think that's what John says in these verses. Jesus is the best, offers the best life because Jesus is the best leader. Look again, page 896 with me, right-hand column, beginning of that paragraph, verse 7. So Jesus again said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep didn't listen to them. I'm the door. If anyone enters by me, he'll be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I'm the good shepherd." We tend to think of Jesus as the one who would rob us of our joy. He says he's come to do the exact opposite. He refers to his followers as sheep in the verses. And my mate said to me, "Why is there a sheep on the front cover?" If you take one of these, and they always have to work out what they're going to put on the front of these covers, don't they? When they give you like a little, like, just John's Gospel at the door there. If you want to take one home and read one, please take one home and read one if you've never read it before. But it's like, why is there a sheep on it? And then she said, actually, it's a ram. She's right. But, I mean, I think it's from John 10. Jesus refers to his followers as sheep. It's subliminal messaging. They're saying, become one of Jesus's followers. He refers to his followers as sheep. And he refers to himself both as the door. Do you see that? First of all, he's the door, he says, verse 7, who gives access to green pastures. The abundance of life. And then he refers to himself in verse 11 as the good shepherd. He's the access to the good life, and he's the good shepherd who leads his people into the good life. Two different images for him. And he speaks about the religious leaders of his day and says that they, in their self-righteous religiosity, you know, they used religion as a means to serve self, to gain at the expense of others. He says they are just fleecing the sheep. They're eating the lambs in the image. They've come to steal and destroy. But he says he's not come to serve himself, but rather he's come to serve the sheep. He says he's not come to destroy their life, but rather to give them life and life to the full. I was thinking, I was trying to think of like pastor illustrations or like, not like Pastor Luigi pastor stuff. I mean like, you know, pastures stuff. And we say, don't we? We always say the grass is greener on the other side. Well, Jesus says, no, it's greener on my side. Jesus says he offers the best life. And I was thinking, when he says good here, when he says life, abundant life, he really does mean the good life. He doesn't mean celery. Do you know what I mean? Where it's like, your mum says it's good for you, and you're like, I'm desperate for cake. He means like a full life. I got a real laugh there. I love that. He means a full life, a rich life, satisfying, fun. And I don't think we believe that very often. He says in verse 10, I've come that we may have life abundantly. An overflow of life is the image, right? And I'm thinking, you know, that seems really odd to us most of the time. But actually, I think it makes total sense if Jesus is telling the truth about who he says he is. Right? He says he claims to be God the Son. And I get for some of us in the room that is a massive if, right? But if he's telling the truth, if he's the creator God, I think it makes sense that he can offer good things. Good things in life come from him. Right? The things that we think of as good in the world, if there's a God who created the world, they come from him. I was just thinking of basic things like music and laughter. Music, dance music for me. You know that feeling, maybe this is your nightmare, but that feeling when the music is on full volume in the shower or on your headphones or in the car when you're on your own, or when you drive past someone and you see that they're going for it in their car on their own and the music is pulsing through your body. And I'll never forget, this is so tragic, but it's true. I was once at SW4 Festival in Clapham, even better than Garage Nation on Streatham Common. But I was once at SW4 in Clapham about 8 years ago with my cousins, listening to one of my all-time favourite DJs. The strobe lights were shooting up into the sky. It was late night, you know, the last thing on in the night. And I'm such a loser, but I really did feel like I was lost in the moment. And then it was a bit like you went home and was like, calm down, yeah, okay. But dance music may not be your thing. But I bet there is a genre of music for almost all of us in the room that does that thing, you know, that weird thing inside us, where when you listen to it, it just takes you away, or it lifts your mood, or it puts a smile on your face. Music does that to us. Or I was thinking of laughter. You know, that thrill of laughing with mates. I don't just mean like replying with the laughing emoji to an Insta story or that slight chuckle. I mean that belly laugh. You know that kind of like, my stomach hurts, I haven't exercised these muscles for a long time kind of laugh. Tears streaming down your cheeks. You know sometimes when you have to literally say like, stop, I can't take anymore, you're like, please just stop for a moment, like, and you're wiping the tears away. And people are looking at you like trying to get away from you wherever you are in public. Jesus says that he's God, and so he's the giver of good gifts. We think he's the rejecter of good gifts, or at least our culture tends to think that. You know, like sex, no. Booze, no. Having a laugh, no. In fact, he says he created them all. Let's not pretend he agrees with us in 21st century Western London about how to best enjoy all those things all the time. That doesn't mean he doesn't like them. He created them. I find it tough to believe that sometimes because I want to live my way. But he says, no, the reason he wants us to live a certain way is because he thinks those things are good and he wants us to use them for our good. He doesn't want to kill and destroy. And here Jesus isn't just offering good stuff that we all get whether or not we follow him, right? Because if that's true, he's just offering like laughter. Well, then why bother following him in the sense that we can all laugh and we all listen to music? And he's also not saying that here and now Christians are free from the pain of life, the suffering stuff. You know, Christians still lose their job, they lose their loved ones, they get ill, they suffer just like everyone else. When Jesus is talking about an abundant life here, he's mainly talking about, in the here and now, an abundance of relational life. Relationally, a richness that we have in the Christian community with one another, and a richness of relationship with the God who created us. After 18 months of lockdown restrictions, I think we are more excited about the idea of community in London, aren't we? Some people have always wanted to get out of London because they hate the fact there's no community here. But I think after 18 months of lockdown, we're desperate for community. I am a major extrovert, and I personally felt like something of a half-human at the end of the lockdowns. Life was much easier not having to engage with anyone else, but it was so much less satisfying. And I think whoever we are, it was just weird, wasn't it, seeing the streets utterly deserted. The joy I had when I got to go to like Victoria Park or East Ham Park or the Olympic Park, which beforehand I was like, I'm never going to the Olympic Park. And then during lockdown, I was like, the Olympic Park! I think we loved it because people were there when they were nowhere else. In London, we long for community, to belong. And Jesus says Christians belong to a global community. A community that isn't just like another social club. I mean, we're, you know, obviously lots of us join social clubs for community, but he says actually better than a social club, because you're not just united by a common thing that you like doing and talking about. He says it's actually like a whole new family, where we belong to each other, where we love each other. He calls us to love each other like we love ourselves. Jesus says that actually no Christian should ever go hungry if another Christian has food. No Christian should go homeless if another has a bed. I mean, it's why we've been receiving texts from our friends who are in Slovakia, who are in Moldova, who are talking about the fact that nationwide churches are sending texts to each other right now, saying we've got family coming over, mother with three children, who can put them up? That's the commitment we make to one another as we follow Jesus. And a relational richness, not just with each other, but with God. And again, look, I know for those of us who don't follow Jesus this morning, the temptation is probably to just switch off as I say that, because, like, you don't believe there is a God, so why do you care about a relationship with God? But I hear you, and we don't have time to discuss now for me to, like, convince you why I believe that there is a God. But just even imagining the idea that there might be, imagining for a moment that Jesus really is the Son of God, if he is in control of the universe, if he did create every good thing, if he does care for us individually, the Bible says he loves us so much that even though I didn't believe in him, he sent his Son to become a man on earth, to reveal himself to us, to die a death that we deserved, that he might forgive us for all the cruel and selfish things we've done, and continue to do, so that he might love us. And I can say that genuinely, for an arrogant fool like myself, you know, I talk the big talk, but when I get home at night, I really know I'm not that big a somebody. I mean, everyone knows I'm not that big a somebody, but there is no joy I've ever experienced in my entire life. No joy. All the thought parks in the world piled up. No joy I've ever experienced like the wonder of having gone to bed at night, knowing I have absolutely stuffed the day up, and knowing that God still forgives me and loves me. Genuinely helps me to sleep, thinking, I cannot believe that you still love me, but you do. Jesus offers the best life. And finally, he says that's not just now, but in the future. You know, all good things do come to an end here. Jesus says, and again, I know that I haven't convinced anyone that it is true, but for those of us who do believe it's true, Jesus is very clear that this world will come to an end and he will put everything right. He will bring in the perfect world we all long for, where we will never wrong others and others will never wrong us, and we'll live for him forever. And even if we don't believe that's true right now, do we at least see how beautiful it would be if it were true? He offers the best life. And in the verses, the reason he says he offers the best life is because of who he is. He keeps tying it back to who he is. So first of all, he says he's the door of the sheep. And then he says, verse 11, I'm the good shepherd. Jesus offers the best life, and he says, because he's the best leader. Look with me from verse 11 again. I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who doesn't own the sheep, he sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I'm the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. The Bible's very clear that everyone follows someone. I know that we don't believe that. That might rail against us, actually, some of us in the room. But the Bible's very clear, at least that's the claim that God makes, that everyone follows someone. He says that we are, our worldview is shaped much more by our parents, our culture, the news app that we subscribe to, the Netflix shows we watch, the Insta accounts that we follow. He says all of those things do weigh on us and the decisions we make. We may not know the philosophers who first pushed the truths that we espouse as ours, but they do still influence the truths that we now fundamentally believe as ours. And Jesus claims that he is a far better leader, far more self-sacrificial leader than any of those people who influence the way we make decisions in our day. But even if we park that for a moment and presume that the options really are between living for Jesus and following my own rules, deciding what I do in life, Jesus decides or I decide, Jesus is still really clear, I think, that we're better off with him than on our own. Because he's the good shepherd. And those of us who are Christians here this morning, we're really used to the idea of verse 11. We're really used to it and gloss over the idea that Jesus came to lay down his life for the sheep. It's like the fundamental thing that we believe. We assume it's normal. You know, that's what they do, isn't it? That's what good shepherds do. They lay down their life for the sheep. And I stopped and I thought about it. And I thought, no, it's not. That's not normal at all. We would normally call that person a stupid shepherd. You know, verse 12 is the normal shepherd, the hired hand. See the wolf coming, particularly before you've got like tasers or whatever they use now. The tasering shepherds, I don't know, but like in the first century, you see a wolf coming, leg it. Maybe they have a go at scaring the wolf off first. I don't know, they were that good with slingshots, weren't they? But when the choice is between losing some sheep and losing the shepherd, I think if you ask the spouse of the shepherd whether they would rather Larry the lamb comes home safely or their spouse comes home safely, you know, I'm really sorry, Larry, you've been good and all that, but yet Jesus says he is the good shepherd who chooses to lay down his life for the sheep. I remember sheep are followers, he's the shepherd. Jesus is saying he's come to die in our place, to take the punishment we deserve so that we might have life and have it abundantly. You know, we've grown up with this idea, haven't we? I think whether or not we're Christian, probably in our culture, we've still grown up with a knowledge of the fact that Jesus dies on a cross. It's what Jesus does. You know, if you ever walk into a church, Jesus on a cross. Ever go into an art gallery of any kind of Italian art from the Renaissance, Jesus on a cross. And we take it for granted that if there is a God in the world, he should be there to serve us. You know, our happiness is what matters, not his. Our morality, not his. But I think the reality is that is as crazy as saying that a shepherd should lay down their life for the sheep. But Jesus says he is that kind of leader. And as such, I don't think we realise he has utterly redefined what we understand leadership to be ever since. Because he's the sacrificial leader, the best leader. In fact, so incredible in these verses is the idea that God the Son would choose to die for us, mere mortals. In verse 17, do you see it says, "For this reason, God the Father loves me." Why does he love him? "Because I lay down my life that I may take it up again." I wonder what it is that our parents would say they most love about us, or would have said that they most loved about us. You know, when they think of us and smile, those of you who have got young children, when you think of them and smile, what is it about them that makes you brim with pride? What is it that you love mulling on, replaying in the mind? Jesus says that for God the Father, the thing that he loves talking about, the thing that he puts on the fridge with the magnets, it's Jesus dying on a cross. He can't get enough of that moment where Jesus chose to die in our place and proved himself to be the best leader. And so if the choice is between following what I want to do and following what Jesus says to do, I really do believe that I'm better off following what Jesus says to do. You may think you're really capable of sorting out your own life and bringing yourself happiness. I often delude myself into thinking I can do that too, but I know for me personally that is clearly a delusion. I have experienced that I'm incapable of doing that for myself. You know, I was thinking sometimes we think that things will be really good for us, and they turn out to be the exact opposite of what we wanted. You know, silly things like that gadget that you absolutely had to buy and you even went into the credit card just so that you could have it because you had to have it now, and a year and a half on you barely use it. You know, just silly things like the gadget. From more important things, like that, you know, that relationship that you chased and chased and chased and chased and now wish you had avoided. Or that job, that career prospect, which you thought was going to be the perfect career path for you and make you desperately happy, and now you are desperate to get out of the job instead. I was thinking, for me personally, and for those of us with addictive personalities, there are all sorts of evidences, aren't there? Examples in the friends we know, maybe in our own lives, of the things that we thought would serve us and then became our masters and wreaked havoc. How many times have I thought something would be good for me, bring me joy, and in the end it caused me pain? I'm not the best person to decide what's good for me. And that's before I talk about all the times I choose my good rather than your good or at the expense of your good. You know, if everything is relative, if all I have to go on is my feelings, knowing how limited I am in my own understanding, how often I'm confused actually over what I want, or even knowing how much what I want in any moment is determined by my mood and I wake up in the morning, that Tuesday I really want it, by Wednesday, nah, forget it. If that is all I've got to go on, genuinely, if that's the best determiner of what's right and wrong in the world, then I think that's a pretty dud litmus test of right and wrong, of what's good for me and what's not. I think, actually, as I've been preparing this, that as a Christian, I really take for granted what an incredible privilege it is to be able to say that the creator of the universe, the one who is all-knowing and all-good, the one who died for me, has revealed to me what he thinks is best for my life. Because I regularly think, oh, shut up, I want to do what I want instead. That's crazy given who Jesus is. And look, I say all of that recognizing that in abstract I believe that to be true. What I mean by that is, you know, like, I ascribe to that reality, but day by day I really struggle with the idea of working that out into my life. Now, I don't want to pretend that anyone who knows me knows I haven't got this sorted, but I regularly doubt in the moment or disbelieve in the moment that what God says is better for me is. You know, I fight God on all sorts of decisions all of the time. You know, from the really small stuff, like whether or not it's better to be cruel or to be kind to that stranger who's just annoyed me in the street. Whether I'm going to be proud or humble in this moment. Whether I'm going to make a joke at your expense or mine. In the moment, I regularly think it's better to do what I want rather than what Jesus wants. I think from the small life choices, and actually also with the massive big life choices, you know, regularly sitting there thinking, you know, is it really better for me to be at home following Jesus rather than thinking, you know what, tonight I'm going to go out and find Mr. Right. Or at least Mr. Right now. And just couple up like everyone else does. Surely I know what's best for me. But in amongst all of those dozens of little mini micro-rebellions that all of us as Christians do, the thing that I think keeps most of us convinced that we should follow Jesus is that he's good. I mean, that's it, isn't it? That he's truly, uniquely, beautifully good. In this account that John, his follower and mate, gives of his life, he recounts instance after instance of Jesus' goodness. Jesus, you know, if he really was God the Son like he claims to be, with all the power in the universe, what did he choose to do with that power? He gave sight to the blind. He healed people of their diseases. He devoted his time and energy to outcasts, to the marginalized in society, to prostitutes, to fraudsters, the persona non gratis of society. He turned oppressors into servants of the needy. He championed the cause of the helpless. I mean, they're all things that our society wants, but they are actually just things that for 2,000 years, Christians have known Jesus was all about. He had such precious relationships with women, whom he honoured and elevated in a world that demeaned them. I think that was one of the things that really struck me when I first started reading this when I was 16. He declared his kingdom to be one where all races were equal. I remember about 5 years after I became a Christian, my uncle Nikos, he won't mind me naming him, my uncle Nikos, he became a Christian too. And he said the thing that did it for him, I mean, they used to laugh at me at first. You know, they get drunk and they talk to me and they laugh at me. They'd be like, my Aunt Lola would be like, I'm coming back as a fly. And I'd be like, okay, I don't think you are. But like, for Nikos, the thing that did it was he read one of these biographies of Jesus' life. He didn't read John, actually. He read Matthew. He said he read Matthew and he said up until that point in his life, he thought he was a good person And so he didn't understand the idea that he needed God to make his life better or for Jesus to have to die for him. He thought he was a good person. He said, then I read about Jesus and learned what true goodness is like. And in the end, that clinched it for him. And it clinched it for 16-year-old me too. I think I couldn't see at the time that living for Jesus really would be better. I thought about all the things I was going to have to lose. But I did get at least clear enough in my mind that I thought, why would someone die for me if their aim was then to ruin my life rather than give me life? And I think that was, for me, the thing I couldn't run away from. And I remember saying, okay, if you want to die for me, you're probably not out to get me. Probably had my interests at heart. Jesus says that he is offering the best life. And he says it's because he's the best leader. So let's in prayer. Father, I'm saying things right now about Jesus that I know to be true. Many of us in this room know to be true, but we don't live like it's true every day at all. Thank you for this reminder. Thank you for the reminder it's been for me. Thank you for us, again, reminding us that Jesus is the Good Shepherd. Thank you that he laid down his life for us. Please, 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 would you help us to speak rightly about following him in such a way that really does encourage us, encourage one another of the fact that he really is better for us. He's a help rather than a hindrance, that our lives are richer for him. Please, Father, for anyone that does decide to take the John's Gospel home, please, when reading it, would you reveal yourself to them? And we ask that in your son's name. Amen.